hi! You are listening to Trading Pages, the sisterly podcast where we challenge each other to read books we would normally never, ever pick up at the bookstore. We share an immense love for books.
Just maybe not that book. Each week, we give each other a new book to tackle and then come together to discuss what we liked, what we didn't like, and who knows, maybe we will even find something we love.
I'm Allie, and I'm the older sister.
And I'm Bronwyn, the younger sister, but not the youngest sister. She kept getting lost in the dungeons of Persona 5.
Thanks for joining us on our adventures with Trading Pages.
Thanks to our mom for sponsoring this episode. She didn't give us money, she just mistook the vodka for the ginger beer and got Allie really drunk while she was in Idaho. This week, I challenged Allie to read Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe by Daniel Alere Sands.
And I had B read Throne of Glass by Sarah J. Maas. Thanks for joining us.
Alrighty, it's been a hot minute.
I know. There's been a lot going on. I definitely underestimated how tired I was going to be after traveling. And then, womp womp, I got sick. Actually, we all got sick.
Yeah, we all got sick.
We did not have COVID, but... You know,
but we all got tested.
But we all had to get tested. And it's one of those things that until you know, you got to act like it is. And so we were stressed. We were sick. I was horrendously jet lagged. It took me a while to, because when you go from the West Coast to the East Coast, it just fucking sucks. I hate it.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Yeah, because the time change and the jet lag.
It hurts.
I can imagine.
It hurts so fucking bad. So, but I am now back on a semi-normal schedule, trying to adjust to life as normal again and gearing up for school starting in a couple of months and stuff like that. But I have a funny story after you do your check-in.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just, same thing. I took a couple of days off of work because we all got sick at the same time, which is very concerning. And you just want to be safe and responsible during these times and not just be like, well, it's probably fine.
Yeah. You can't assume.
Yeah. And I had two more TikToks blow up in the meantime. What? Yeah, I did not, like, really mean for them to blow up. I just was, like, when I initially had those 2 days off where I was waiting for COVID, for my COVID results to come back, I was really anxious, and I couldn't do anything except for, like, those really short bursts of TikTok. Like, I was just, I was so, like, I couldn't watch any movies, I couldn't read any books, I was so stressed. And so I ended up making like kind of this big cluster of TikToks because it just was like, that's just what you do. And two of them ended up actually like, the first one got like 10,000 likes and the other one is all the way up to like 50,000 likes. And I don't
that's
know
insane.
How this, I don't know how
it's
this
like, you never
happening.
Know. What,
I'm a big
what
deal
it's gonna be.
On TikTok, and I have like 9,000 followers, and I'm such a like.
You gotta tell your followers to come listen to Trading Pages.
Okay, but anytime I try to do anything like that, nobody pays attention to it. Like I did actually have a video up once. I don't know if you missed it, but I had a video up that was like, "Hey, I do this podcast. Go check it out."
Oh,
it got zero views.
Zero. Oh my gosh!
So
why?
TikTok is weird.
Yeah. I was gonna say TikTok you suck, but like TikTok is like a hell site of it's not doesn't
I know.
Make sense.
Well, and but, like there are people that are like, you know, and multiple people are of the opinion that if you have the app, you should delete it because the Chinese government and like if the Chinese government really wants to spy on me, I'm totally chill with that. Like you live like you glean what you can. And it's not like I mean, if you have a phone, you are being spied on, like not to be a conspiracy theorist.
Like all that information, we already readily give a lot of that information. So.
Yeah, so I don't know.
I haven't been using it as much just because, I don't know. I was trying to wean myself off of it because I was becoming too dependent on it when I was feeling anxious. So I've actually become a lot more productive since I I didn't delete the whole thing, but I just deleted the shortcut, so it wasn't as easy to get to.
Yeah, I think that I probably need to wean myself off of TikTok as well, because I've just kind of, I've been really, like, just these past couple of weeks, I've just been really kind of stressed and anxious, and, like, we had to euthanize the family cat, and, like, it was just...
Ugh.
So, like, as bad as it is to depend on a, like, on an app or a site or things like that, like, I just kind of had to be mindless for,
like, absolutely. Good 4 days. Sometimes, as long as you're doing it in a controlled way, you know, I think it's good to just kind of disconnect. And there is a lot of things that I really like about TikTok that are just really not toxic, like mm-hmm. it is on Facebook. And so it was a really nice escape from that. And so I wish that there was something that was, you know, similar, you know, but I definitely think that it's kind of weird that it's an app that is created and owned by the Chinese government, but they don't let their own citizens use it. Like, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, definitely we could do our whole spiel about TikTok, and we could probably...
Oh, wait, but I have a funny story. So, okay, it's a very brief, funny story. So, shortly before we were supposed to record, I went out to check on my new baby chickens, because our chickens had babies.
We only had two.
Six, actually, in total, because I gave the other four away. but anyway, they're getting to be big girl chickens. So they're out in their kind of teenager coop. They're not with the rest of them. So I was gonna just run outside and check on them real quick and see how they did overnight, 'cause I'm that kind of person. And I opened my door, onto my back porch, and this like being falls on my head from above me. Now, about a week ago, we had a massive, probably 3 foot long black snake inside the coop, like coiled up underneath all of the eggs. And yeah. So it wasn't that big, but I'm just a little gun shy right now with like things in the trees are falling above me. So I scream, Quinn comes running, and then we realize that it's this adorable little green tree frog. I thought it was maybe like a skink or something. It was so cute. But like I panicked because it fell on my head. And so the girls were coming out, and it hopped inside the house at one point, and we're like shooing it back outside because we don't want the dogs to eat it. And so we're just kind of like hanging out and looking at this frog, and it got a bunch of dog hair on it because, you know, my dogs are very fluffy. And Quinn was trying to very gently like pick the fluff off of it because it was all tangled up. Well, it panicked and jumped at her face.
Oh, no. Quinn.
And so she's kind of like, you know, when something jumps at your face, you do the kind of like flail. But then she looks around and we can't see where it landed.
Oh, gosh.
And I look at her, and its little green little hands are clinging for dear life to, like, the end of a strand of hair.
It's no.
In her hair. It was so funny. And she's like, it's in my hair. And she's, like, getting it off. But,
At least it was a frog and not a snake, because frogs are super sweet. Kind of dumb, but,
Yeah. No, it was just really funny. But, like, when we did have the snake, she was, like, naming it and wanted to touch it as it's, like, trying to strike at Tom as we're trying to, like, go away, go be free, go climb a tree. And Quinn's like, can I touch it? Like, this kid loves snakes. And so I just feel like there's going to be a snake in my house sometime in the future, and I'm not okay with that. But I'm also not going to stifle her for the things that she loves. But you...
No, I think that if she has a love for snakes now, that's only going to get stronger as she gets older, especially the more that she sees.
This is the age that kids are normally really afraid of snakes. Uh-huh. I have to tell the kids not to touch them, not because I think that they're bad or dangerous, but I'm like, don't touch wild animals. You got to leave them be, but they will pick up anything. You know, Quinn picked up a worm snake one day, and she's like, it's just a worm snake. It's cool.
You're like, not really, actually.
Yeah. Well, the worm snakes are non-venomous, and they're literally just like 3 or 4 times the size of like a nightcrawler.
Oh.
And they're colored. Like they can fit in the palm of your hand. And so she like picked it up and was like walking around with it. I'm like, can you put that back?
Oh, maybe? I would vibe with a snake that size. Oh, man, yeah, that'd be great.
They're really cute. They have like pink bellies and gray on the back. Like they really look like a giant earthworm.
Aw, they're so cute.
I know. Google it. You'll probably, they're kind of gross looking because they look like a worm, but you know.
No,
would you still love me if I was a worm?
Would you still love me if I was a worm? I had,
would you still love me if I was a worm snake?
One of my friends the other day, okay, so here's to go back to the tangent. Would you still love me if I was a worm? I told one of my friends who's going to be visiting Idaho at some point that if you go out on the river, that there are leeches in our river. And she was like, oh, God, I'm absolutely not going into any river or stream or whatever if there's leeches. And then my other friend, Kat, she was like, leeches are just the vampire version of would you still love me if I was a worm? And I can't get that out of my head because that is the singularly funniest thing that anyone has ever said to me.
No, they're completely different creatures. You cannot compare them.
You absolutely different. Can. They're, well, one vampires has and teeth. Humans are different creatures.
One has teeth. You can't. Yeah. No.
Like a vampire. Leeches are the vampire version of would you still love me if I was a worm? Tell me I'm wrong. This is not a controversial statement. Because okay. They have teeth and they will bite you and they'll suck your blood. Bite me okay. on this.
Okay, whatever. You win this one. Anyway, so we should probably get to our book talk. So we are going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, I don't know if it's my turn to go first, but even if it's not, I want to. I want to really bad.
Okay, I was trying to think of who goes first, but we'll figure it out when the break
okay.
goes up.
So come back and be surprised as we duke it out for who gets to go first this week.
Because it has been so long since we've put out an episode, so. All right,
we'll be back in a minute.
Oh, hey there. I didn't notice you sitting there. Thanks for joining me. My name is Deese. I'm the host of the Social Hour podcast. You know, I've just been sitting here, sipping on some Earl Grey tea by the fireplace in my satin robe, just watching the rain come down and thinking about how the heads at the Pants Pending Network wanted me to do a family-friendly promo for the Social Hour to show that it's a program that can be shared by everyone in the family. So here's some clips from the show that the whole gang can sit down and enjoy. Really? We've got none? Like zero? Oh, what the f***?
Get ready for the Social Hour!
Alrighty, so we are back, and we have surmised that it is Allie's turn to go first.
Yes, I was right.
We had to go back. We had to go back and listen to our own podcast because we are professionals. So I had Allie read Aristotle and Dante, Discover the Secrets of the Universe, which is a book that I read a couple years back that I really, really, really enjoyed. It is essentially this coming-of-age story for these two boys, Aristotle and Dante, who they have different family dynamics, different things going on in their lives, and they have a really, really, really intense friendship that they both are trying to understand. And it just is a really lovely book to read, and I enjoyed every bit of it. And I, from what I have gleaned, just from the bits of time that I have talked to Allie about it, I think that she also really enjoyed it too. So I'm excited to hear what she thought. So, Allie,
Nah, I didn't like it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm totally joking.
Get fucked. I know you loved it.
Like, I don't even know where to begin. Like, my heart is warm reading this. Like, I went, like, when I finished it the other day, I had tears in my eyes. It was so beautiful.
Oh, I know how that goes.
It's just like, oh, man. Yay, and sometimes, like, I wish that I was a better book critic. And this is what I struggle with writing as well. It's like, it just trying to find the words that really capture how this book made me feel. It was poetic, but not quite as intense or difficult to get through as your Invisible Helicopter book.
I crawled through it.
I crawled through it. But there were definitely parts of it that were a little bit almost kind of bordering on surrealism, you know, when Aristotle is talking about his dreams and stuff. And I was actually pretty surprised by the ending of it. I thought it was going to go one way, but then it really went a different way throughout the whole middle of the book. And it turns out this is not at all the book that I thought that it was when you had said the title. I was thinking that it was more recent. But I was really surprised because it's set in, I want to say it's set in the 90s. I feel like, yeah.
Yeah. They make a few references. They don't ever say the exact year, but they make a few references to like the type of technology that they're using, and which I love. Show don't tell. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and his dad is a veteran of the Vietnam War, and there's several things that I want to touch on that are just, I really think I need to address about this book because just like what really spoke to me. Number one, I have to say I decided to listen to the audiobook because the first thing that I do when Bronwyn assigns me a book, if it's not a manga, I go onto my Hoopla app, which is my free library borrowing app. If you don't have it, this is not sponsored, but fucking do it. Get it. Anyway, the book is on there as an audiobook, and who is narrating it?
And I
nearly shit myself. Lin-Manuel Miranda narrates this book.
And in case you don't know, Lin-Manuel Miranda is Hamilton. If there is like a single soul out there who does not know this yet.
Doesn't know who Lin-Manuel Miranda is?
I don't know. There might be a few people, but
I guess so. If you've been living under a rock, Lin-Manuel Miranda, he wrote Hamilton. He also wrote the music for Moana. He also wrote In the Heights. So Lin-Manuel Miranda narrates, and just his ability to embody all of the different voices, it was incredible how he could make these really subtle changes in his voice, and the voice of Dante was so distinct from the voice of Ari, from the voice of Ari's mom, or Dante's mom, or Ari's dad, or Dante's dad. And so just his whole performance of the whole thing just really made it. So I would actually recommend, like, you could read it, but I highly recommend going and listening to the audiobook just to hear this incredible performance that Lin-Manuel does.
Because I read the book. I actually own a physical copy of the book. And I heard that Lin-Manuel Miranda did the audiobook. And I was like, I think I need to have a re-listen because I think I read it before Lin-Manuel even did that, or maybe I just didn't know, but like that is, I would absolutely revisit the book and revisit the audiobook for sure.
Yeah. So aside from just the performance being incredible, which, you know, that's just unique to an audiobook instead of a book. There were several things that really hit home with me. Just as a counselor, I thought it was really interesting. There's this idea, and there's some new science around it. It's fairly new, but this idea of epigenetic trauma, which is basically that trauma is passed through our genes and can be passed on to our children. That when the body, when a person experiences trauma, not only does it rearrange your neural pathways, so trauma actually causes brain damage. It changes the pathways in your brain. But then there's also, there's these new studies that show that trauma affects you all the way down to your DNA, and which makes sense because thousands of years ago, if your ancestor experienced a bad, scary monster, they'd want that the skills for that to be passed on and encoded to their offspring so that they would be less likely to die of that big, scary monster, whatever it was, bear, lion, whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah, so random science. So why this is relevant in this book. So his father goes to Vietnam, and he has, and he comes back with quite obviously PTSD based on, you know, just the clues that they give in the novel. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how Ari is dealing with certain issues that I think kind of speak to that epigenetic trauma, that just because he didn't experience that trauma firsthand, you know, he has a hard time fitting in. He has a hard time falling into step. And it's not just because he's struggling with his feelings about how he, like the romantic feelings that he has or feelings about other people. He feels really out of step and feels like he can't cry or he's not made to cry and he's got to hold all these things in. You could say that was learned by observing his father, but his mother is very emotional and she's very open and things like that. And so I think this idea of that epigenetic trauma not only affecting Ari, but affecting other people in the story was really interesting.
I mean, I think along with that, if I may kind of I think that that is really interesting. But the other thing, too, is that his brother was, like, in jail. And so I think that's kind of another reason why he felt like he just needed to keep his head down and not cause any trouble. And
yeah, and that part of it, too, because that all happened, I don't know if that happened after his dad went to war or I get confused after, about, like, the time. Yeah, it was after he came back. Yeah. And so that was really interesting because I spent the whole book feeling like we were never really going to find out what happened to Ari's brother. And I was so glad to see them as a family come back together and show that it's possible for them to repair the harm that happened between them. It wasn't like they were all trying to hurt each other, but it was a thing that happened. And they stopped running away from their problems, and they sat together, and they got through it. I thought it was especially interesting, the stereotypes and biases that it made me confront in my own self, because, you know, I've always kind of understood that, like, the cultural norm of being machismo and being really tough and we don't cry. But then you see two Mexican families that are very open with their love for each other and, you know, just the very normal relationship and family dynamics, and the fact that Ari's parents were supportive of LGBT, and, you know, that it was just everyone was very progressive. And so that was like my one complaint was that, or not really a complaint, but just something that I noticed was, you know, at that time, you know, I think it's fantastic that both Ari and Dante's parents were just accepting of them no matter what. And I don't know how accurate that was for maybe like the early 90s. I definitely think that some parents would have been accepting. I wish it would have gone the other way, though.
Well, and I think that this book kind of could have taken place in, you know, maybe even the early 2000s, early 90s, early 2000s, whichever, whenever it takes place.
Yeah,
I think that while it may not be accurate, I do think that, you know, in the 90s, people were at least trying. People were moving towards it.
Yeah.
And I think that there is enough conflict in the book that you don't also need to create homophobic parents because,
yeah.
And also, especially because, you know, in the 90s, there were a lot of people who were very accepting. Mm-hmm. And I know that when I was growing up and I was going to high school, there was And I went to high school during the 90s. And I think, no, I didn't. I did not go to high school during the 90s. What am I saying?
You were in middle school in the 90s.
No. I was in elementary school in the 90s. Holy shit.
Oh, shit.
I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was in elementary school and middle school in the 90s. And then I think it was, like, the tail end of middle school that it was, like, the 2000s. So,
yeah, no, and, like, I can't keep track of time.
No, it's okay. No, but, like, I liked that, though, because I feel that so many LGBT stories that come out, they really center around the coming out of the person to their family or having to hide it from their family. And it's that they're not going to be accepted by their family. And that really wasn't what the story was about. It was about Ari coming to terms with who he was as a person and just accepting himself for whoever he was and whatever his beliefs were or whatever he wanted to get out of life. And, you know, it would have been really easy to say, you know, that, yeah, he had homophobic parents, but it didn't need to be that way. And I thought it was really wholesome and beautiful to depict two families that just really cared about their children and truly loved them unconditionally to the point that, like, it really did bring tears to my eyes reading about it, because so often, especially when I read YA, it's always like bad parents, like neglectful parents or dead parents, because it's a plot device that makes things easier. The parents aren't there, they can't tell you not to go kill a dragon. But I thought that, you know, the parents in the story were just as important as Dante and Aristotle were. So the last line of the book, I was just like sitting in bed, just crying, you know, like how could it ever be afraid of loving Dante? Like, how could I ever be afraid of this? It was just, it was so fucking beautiful. It was,
it's really great. It's really, that book definitely gave me fuzzy feelings. And it's one of those weird books where there are a lot of really, really big conflicts and a lot of really big feelings, but it is not a tragic story in any way, shape, or form. And that's one thing that I really appreciate is that they did experience a type of trauma together. It wasn't, you know, the getting hit by a car and watching your friend get hit by a car and the guilt and those types of things.
Oh, that came out of left field for me. I was like, holy shit. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, and so they did go through a fairly big trauma together, and they had their ups and downs, and things were really intense in that book. There were a lot of really big feelings, but like I said, it was not a tragedy in any way, shape, or form, which I can really appreciate that the book was genuine, and it was open, and they talked about their feelings, but And it was just like life, where there are certain things that they don't get resolved, and you agree to move forward on it or agree to figure it out as time goes on. And that definitely is how things were portrayed in the book, with things with his dad and some things with Dante. And so,
yeah. Oh, I'm just like, I'm looking through quotes from the book on my phone, and there's so much of it that was just really so poetic, and now I want to read everything that this guy has written. You know, the line, "The summer was not meant for boys like me. Boys like me belong to the rain." And it's just and like his love of the desert and how he just wanted to go out, and you know, that was his favorite place to be and think, and I have nothing
truck and going hanging out and
like, really, I have nothing bad to say about this book. It 10 out of 10. It was amazing.
Well, I'm really glad that you liked it. I know it was already on your to-be read list, but
no, it wasn't. I thought that it was, but then when I went back, it wasn't. So I would not have. I was thinking it was something else.
Oh,
but yeah.
Well, that's good. And I'm very glad that you liked it, because it's kind of a different book, but it's definitely one that I really enjoyed, and I was hoping that you would also enjoy it as well. And it's a pretty It's not a controversial book as far as being liked, like a few of my other ones are.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't one of those books where I recommend it to other people and they're like, hey, Bronwyn, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So,
why?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that one. I'm truly glad that I got to read that one. So,
excellent.
Yeah. So now I'm nervous to hear what you thought of my book, but we'll, it's probably about time for us to wrap up this segment and then we will come back and then I will introduce the book that I had you read. And then I'll hear what you thought of it.
Alrighty, we'll be back in just a bit.
Is this just a situation where you're going to cut a bunch of our blurbs out of context?
No, because then there would be blisters in awkward places, which would be terrible.
Oh, here we go. That is the dirtiest thing I've ever seen.
Listen to The Nerd with Adam, Will, and Amanda.
Why did I get top billing? I don't deserve top billing.
Because out of the two of us, you're the one she likes better.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
I'm 8 months pregnant. Put another one in me.
And that's when she figured out that I had taken drugs.
How are all of you? We're going to do a promo, but we're just going to talk sex.
I got to see your dick.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
She cooked dinner for me in lingerie, which hopefully she doesn't listen to this. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
This podcast phenomenon is sweeping the nation, and we're all up on the bandwagon with the plethora of episodes at nerd.pantspending.com.
Willem Dafoe gives me a lady boner.
Blue Chew is bullshit, by the way.
Listen to The Nerd. It's not the worst thing that can happen to you. Is that a good no? It takes effort to do a promo.
Yeah.
And I think we knew that before.
Although I feel like we could just put that part in.
Yeah.
That along with the nerdy thing Adam said and me with the sexy voice. There you go. There's your promo, Will. Congratulations.
The Nerd. I'm sorry.
Okay, so welcome back. And it is now time for Bronwyn to talk about Throne of Glass, which is book one of the Throne of Glass series by, when I say, like, my favorite. I have a lot of favorite authors, but Sarah J. Maas, she is the top. I would read her, like, everything she ever writes, I will read. So anyway, Throne of Glass is about an 18-year-old assassin. And the story kind of picks up really in the middle of her story because it starts where she's been serving time in the salt mines of Endovir as a slave for the crimes against the crown, you know, because she was an assassin, she got caught. But then the prince of the kingdom, Prince Dorian, comes and pulls her out of the salt mine because he wants her to be his champion in this contest of thieves and assassins to be, you know, the king's personal assassin. I feel like maybe there was one other girl there in the group. I can't remember. She might have been the only girl that was there. But really, that's just like a small part of the story. There is so much going on that sets the story. And well, the reason I love this book so much is I love the character of Selena, and I love how Sarah writes all of these twists and turns into the story. In every single book, there's some kind of thing that happens in the story that you just don't see coming. But then when you go back and read the book again, you see all of the things that she laid in there to lead to where you ended up. Selena is the queen of sass. I absolutely love what a jackass she is. Like, she's not a nice person. I just absolutely love this series. It's incredible. So, Bronwyn, what did you think?
Okay. So, I have a confession to make.
What?
I have a confession to make.
What's the confession?
I didn't finish it.
What?
I didn't finish it.
What?
I know, I time. So I was like waiting. I was like, I gotta tell her, but I gotta wait till the podcast. And I'm just sitting here while you're talking about it. I didn't finish it.
Wait, so it was like you didn't have time, or was it did not finish because you didn't like it?
Kind of both, if I can be perfectly honest. Okay, so let me just, don't panic. I can, you're not
I'm
saying
panicking.
Anything, but I can
I'm
feel
panicking.
It.
I'm panicking.
Okay, so I got really pissed at Allie last week for not reading all of Durarara that I assigned her, and then I hit that myself. The main thing is that this
It was
is,
long. It was really long. It gave you a long book. I'm sorry.
It's and I don't normally have problems with long books, especially long convoluted books. It was just I think that the main issue, and absolutely no shade for the person who does the audiobook, because she has a very lovely voice and she's yeah. a lovely actor, but she read so slowly. So slowly.
You realize and you can adjust that. You can change the reading speed.
Yes, I know. But then it didn't sound right. It really, when I tried to speed it up and make it do whatever, I couldn't understand her because of the way that she was reading. So I did try. I tried to adjust that. And in fact, I did that with the Star Wars book, was I did speed it up a little bit. But it was just like there was something that was really monotonous about listening to the book, and I'm not trying to like throw shade, because it's not that I didn't enjoy the book and I didn't enjoy the parts that I got to. It just was like the
well,
last
didn't
part
you
that
switch
I got
to reading like the just like reading the book.
Well, and that's what I plan on doing, is I think okay. that I probably should just read the book. But like when I was the last part that I listened to, it was like I actually got mad. And I think that it was just because I was like, let me also remind you, and not just you, but like everybody else, is that like there was a lot of she going on and kind of in our life, and our cat got really sick, and yeah. there like Allie was and then when Allie was visiting, I was spending all of my free time with her basically. And so yeah. then I returned to the book and there was maybe we all had COVID and maybe we this, and I kind
yeah.
of hit a
no,
little
totally
bit of
get
a,
it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hit a little bit of a kind of high depressive bump when you left. Just
well,
because
I totally
I think
understand.
That kind of,
I just didn't want you to just outright completely hate it, because there's definitely some parts, because it's high fantasy, it can be a lot to digest. Like any high yeah, fantasy, and, because you're like, okay, well, what's the language and the culture and everything?
Well, and here's the thing, is that like I got frustrated with it because all of this is going on and I'm trying to listen to the book, and there was this one segment that just like it made me so like physically angry, which is when I knew that like, because I one of my symptoms of my depression is like irritation. And I got so irritated because it was she like found this secret tapestry. And it was like she opened the tapestry door. She listened. She took a step in. The wind whistled. She took a few more steps in. It was dark. The wind whistled again. She walked a few more steps. And then she looked out. What was that? What did she see? What was it? The wind whistled again. And I was like, oh my God, stop!
Okay, fair enough. And so, I get to, yeah. Well, and I didn't listen like, to the audiobook, so, and like, it truly speaks to how well an audiobook is written or read can change your whole experience and your perception of the book. Like, you know, the book I read, it could have been complete crap, but because Lin-Manuel Miranda was reading it so amazingly, I could listen to him read a grocery list and yeah. I'd be like, oh, this is so compelling. You know, but I'd be like all so, into it.
Yeah. So it really like listening to the audiobook, and I think that the other part of it too is that I can normally focus quite well while I'm working and listening to an audiobook, but there were so many characters and so many nuances.
Yeah, there's
and
she does
I
a
think,
fuck ton of characters.
And
which
I
is
think
which
not
is part
being
of
able
why
to
I like her, but
and I think not being able to see all of the names and all of the like kind of made it a little bit difficult, and I tried to keep track. And then after I literally did not listen for a whole entire week, and then I went back to trying to listen, and there was just like this really tedious part. And there were a lot of parts of the books that I thought just didn't need to be there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite understand Selena's character and like how much freedom she had versus how little free. And I don't know, I guess it just like, it wasn't exactly my cup of tea, which I'm surprised because I normally do really like high fantasy.
Yeah.
And, well, and really,
I thought that
Selena was a good character in a character sense. Like, I guess I'm trying to think of how to put it out. Like, I did think that Selena was a strong female character, which I can appreciate.
Yeah.
And she knew what she wanted. She also, like, I did really enjoy when they were doing the rock climbing and she ended up saving the little boy. I thought that that scene was definitely really, or I guess he wasn't a little boy, he was a younger kid.
What was his name again? It was Nyx, right?
I can't remember.
That comes back later in book like 7. I just snorted, sorry.
No, it's okay. But I also, like, I was not, like, super invested in the two male characters that are the will they, won't they, who's is she going to end
see,
up with.
But that's why you got to finish it and see. Like, I almost feel like had we done our normal thing where I suggest that you read a book and then we're talking the whole time, I could have been like, just wait. Just wait, because can I give you a spoiler?
No.
No? You don't want a spoiler? About the two boys?
No, because I'm gonna read it.
Oh, you are going to read it. Okay. Because...
yeah, it's not a did not finish, like, I'm never going to go back to it. But.
Because just... this is what I was talking about. Like, you're going to think that it's your typical love triangle. That's not necessarily true.
Okay.
So, I mean, it starts off as, like... It starts off, and if you've read Twilight and stuff, you're going to be like, oh, this is going to be another Edward Jacob situation. That's not how Sarah does shit.
Okay. Yeah, I think that you'll be heading that direction.
Yeah. But, so... like, I just keep an, keep an open mind.
Does she end up with the woman? She ends up with the woman, doesn't
no.
she? Oh, well, fuck, then, well, like,
well, and, like, there's a whole bunch
lesbians,
of shit.
Then what? If it doesn't end in lesbians, then what? What could possibly be better than it ending in lesbians?
Well, the relationship that she and, do they pronounce it Nehemiah or Nehemiah?
What?
The girl? Nehemiah?
Nehemiah, yeah.
Nehemiah. The relationship that they have becomes a huge catalyst, but that doesn't really come up until book 2. And so, honestly, this one really is about a long haul, and Throne of Glass is really setting the stage for a lot of things and dropping a lot of breadcrumbs, not even really hints, just like a few things that then, as the rest of the story goes on, I almost gave you the novellas, which would have been shorter to read. And so maybe now I should give you the novellas, because maybe if you read, like, one of the short novellas that are really fast paced, that might kind of grab your attention a little bit more. And it gives, like, kind of what happened, like the events leading up to her going to the salt mines of Endovir.
Yeah.
But also it's a little bit spoilery.
It definitely was an interesting story and it had a lot of potential. I think that it was just kind of a perfect storm of you gave me the book to read. It was really long. And then you came and visited and I was occupied with that. And then I kind of
hit. Which was wonderful, by the way.
A depressive stint. And I think that it was just kind of the perfect storm for like just. Yeah. And like, I think that that's okay. If you are not feeling up to reading, I don't think that I
force
myself to read.
No, and so I'm glad that you did, because like I don't want you to force yourself to read it and then hate it, where like if you put it down and give yourself a break from it, I honestly really think that you would like it and like the subsequent books. But if you're not in the right headspace, then you're probably not going to enjoy it because it's just, it's not what you think it is. And things end up changing.
I kept trying to go back to reading it, and I kept on just like really hitting a wall. And I knew that if I kept trying to read it, it would just... And I felt really guilty. Like, the guilt was another really big part of it.
Yeah, no, and like you don't need to feel guilty
for not reading it.
Well, I mean, like, I felt guilty too when I couldn't finish Durarara, but like, none of this should be torture.
I figured you wouldn't make me feel guilty because...
No, but like, sometimes you feel guilty no matter what, though. And especially since, like, I gotta stop overselling stuff because, like, this book, this whole series just means so much to me. I really, really love it. And I love the Court of Thorn and Roses series. And then she just released Crescent City, which was even better than all of them that she's read. She also wrote a Catwoman book that I still have yet to read. I have a signed copy of it, and I've been too afraid to pick it up because I don't want to mess it up. She's just incredible, but I don't know. Sometimes, like Throne of Glass, you kind of got to get through it. And then after you get through Throne of Glass, you're like, oh shit, this is what the story's really about. I thought that it was about this, but it's actually about this.
Interesting. Yeah, because I definitely feel like it had a lot of potential, and it's
like,
not
did you
that
get,
I didn't...
Yeah, did you get to the part where she goes shopping in town and she has like that really... what's the word I'm looking for? She's very, not self-centered, but very, like, vain, like, where she goes and she shops and she buys, like, the dresses, and did you get to that part?
No, I did not.
The last part like, that I got she ends to up was coming when across she found... Like... Oh.
The last part that I got to was when, let me see... they found, like, the second dead body, and then there was a tapestry that she went behind, and they were revealing something that they just wouldn't...
The talking lock. There's, like, a knob or, like, a lock or something.
Talking knob.
Yeah.
The talking knob sounds very suggestive.
Yeah. I didn't mean to...
No,
it's like she finds a door with a lock, and it talks to her.
I don't even think I made it halfway through.
Yeah.
And I do feel bad because it's not that I stopped reading it because it was a bad book. I just hit this one part. And this happens to me a lot with books. It happens more often than I think that people who really enjoy books, a lot of times when they want to consume a lot of books, I think that automatically if they hit something that they're like, okay, nope, I don't feel like it, they kind of toss it away and move on to the next one.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that's kind of what, I think that's what happened with my brain was it was just like, if you're not enjoying it, then you don't want to read it. And I was like, okay, but I have to because it's for the podcast. Mm-hmm. My brain was like, you don't want to.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, like there's a bunch of books that I'm supposed to be reading right now just because I have advanced reader copies that I need to get out. But I've been reading other books that I have that I'm just kind of tearing through them a lot more quickly just because like they've just made me feel better than those other books. But the one book I started reading though, The Friend Scheme by I can't remember who is writing it. That one's coming out. Oh shit, when is it coming out? I'm trying to find what the date is today. Oh, it comes out tomorrow. Yeah. Friend Scheme comes out tomorrow and I'm trying to get through that one. It's really good so far, but I definitely need to finish it before tomorrow.
With me being sick, I was also really tired, and reading makes me even more sleepy, so I think that was probably another part of it, too, was that I was just, was just so sleepy
tired. I didn't read either.
That I couldn't didn't. Even...
Yeah. Well, and that's why we couldn't record last week, was I hadn't finished the book last week, because I was too tired to even listen to the audiobook. Whatever virus we had, it wasn't coronavirus, but it definitely... You know, whatever the bug was really kind of took us all down pretty hard. And I don't know if it's just because we had been stuck inside for so long and it was the first time that we actually got exposed to germs and our immune system was like, what is this? Yeah. But, yeah. No, I completely understand.
It did really...
Yeah. I hope
it did,
you...
It did really... Oh.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, I hope that you are able to pick it up eventually and enjoy it. And then also doesn't put you off of her other books. Because maybe if you didn't like this one, I think that you could potentially like the other ones, too.
I think so. I mean, it's like, not that I got put off from the book. It's just that it was a perfect storm of being tired, being sick, kind of being depressed. And we all know that a symptom of depression is that you, even if you don't even want to do things that you like, you could basically just scroll through TikTok.
That fucking sucks. It's like,
And I think that was just that perfect storm. And then it was just, Allie knows this. The listeners probably don't know this, but if there is a thing that irritates me, I have a very hard time letting it go. And in fact, one of the biggest examples I have of this is I'm currently watching She-Ra. And I finished the first season and I'm still like, I'm looking at my friend and I'm like, she didn't know that the Fright Zone were the bad guys. And Sen is like, yeah, the Fright Zone, like, Adora just isn't all that smart. And I'm like, how could she not know that the Fright Zone was the scare? They literally are like, have death robots everywhere. And Seneca's like, you're going to have to let that go. And I'm like, I absolutely cannot. So yeah,
She was a really good show, though. And side note, I still need to send you the video of Quinn and her little friend at their vaulting competition doing a vaulting routine to the theme of She-Ra, because it's so fucking cute. It's really great.
Please, please do, because I see, that was the other thing, was I was also watching She-Ra because I really love Scorpia because she's a big huggy lady.
And oh my gosh, I love Scorpia. She's like on the bad side, but she's so great. Oh my gosh. Okay, we got to stop because we're going off on a tangent again. But anyway,
I know, right?
we can talk about She-Ra. Yeah. So anyway, we're going to wrap this segment up. I have your selection for our next episode. I'm pretty excited about this one. So we will come back and we will guess each other's, do our little reveal guesstimation game. I don't know what I'm talking about.
You good?
I need more coffee.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Okay. All right, cool. All right. We will catch you back here in a second.
All right.
Hey, it's Burr Martin, the internet selfie dad. Join me and my wife as we talk about all the weird news from around the world.
Mirror reports a married couple have slammed strangers for assuming their grandfather and granddaughter because of their 30-year age gap. Defiant Chelsea, 22, says they're happier than ever after the first meeting in a coffee shop. Bruce, a 52-year-old retired car dealer, offered his recommendations on coffee, and the pair hit it off from there. They say that...
You recommend a good bean. I guess you get a hot chick.
Wow. Gave her the hot bean. They say that they've been inseparable ever since they met. Bruce said, I never thought someone Chelsea's age would be interested in me. She has an old soul. Insider.
Wow. I just knew that there were some really bad jokes rolling around. No, you just grabbed that both hands white knuckles, didn't you?
Name of his sex tape.
So subscribe now to the Burr Martin Experience podcast. It's a weird world out there. Let's laugh at it together.
Okay. So we are back, and now it is time for our little guessing game. Whatever
guesstimation
Allie said in the last
station.
Segment.
I don't know what the fuck came over me.
That was very interesting, to say the least. But
words are hard.
Words are hard. So what we do in this segment is we give each other the title of our book, and then the other person will guess what the book is about, and then we will read the description and talk just a little bit about it in a non-spoily sense. And then we will be off on our way to read the book. So the book that I am having Allie read, and here is her guess, I'm having you read The Manual of Detection.
Okay, so I'm guessing this is not actually a detective story. I really want to say that it's a detective story. I feel like everything's been like YA, high school age. I don't know. Somebody's looking for something, and you kind of gave it away when we were talking before we started recording, but I think it's surrealist.
It is a surrealism novel, but yeah. you're off. You said something that was kind of
Is it actually a detective correct. Story? Is it a detective?
It is actually. So, well, okay. So if we remember, the sentence that came out of your mouth last time was that it is a surrealism novel. So yes and no.
Okay.
It's like, it's one of those things. It is about a detective, but the main character is not a detective per se. Let me go ahead and read you
synopsis. But like, they are a detective? Okay, just read it.
Okay, I'll explain it afterwards. But this is it's another surrealism one, so you're gonna have to just vibe.
I'm in vibe mode.
In an unnamed city, always slick with rain, Charles Unwin toils as a clerk at a huge imperious detective agency. All he knows about solving mysteries comes from the reports he's filed for the illustrious detective Travis Savart. When Savart goes missing and his supervisor turns up murdered, Unwin is suddenly promoted to detective, a rank for which he lacks both the skills and the stomach. His only guidance comes from his new assistant, who would be perfect if she weren't so sleepy, and from the pithy yet profound Manual of Detection. Think The Art of War, as told by Damon Runyon. Unwin mounts his search for Savart, but is soon framed for murder, pursued by goons and gunmen, and confounded by the infamous femme fatale Cleo Greenwood. Meanwhile, strange and troubling questions proliferate. Why does the mummy at the Municipal Museum have modern-day dental work? Where have all the city alarm clocks gone? Why is Unwin's copy of the manual missing Chapter 18? When he discovers that Savart's greatest cases, including the three deaths of Colonel Baker and the man who stole November 12th, were solved incorrectly, Unwin must enter the dreams of a murdered man and face a criminal mastermind bent on total control of a slumbering city. Sounds like fun, right?
It really does. Like, I'm very excited. This is really cool.
Yeah, so now do you get why when you said it's not about a detective? And I was like, well, it kind of is, but Unwin is not a detective.
Dude, and I just looked it up, and the audiobook is on my Hoopla. So once again, you have given me the perfect suggestion, because I don't have to.
Heck yeah.
Yes.
I do like the Audible narration. One of the few ones that I've listened to that has a dude narrator, and he has a very, like, Manual of Detection type voice. Like, he really...
That's exciting. That's really cool. I'm very excited for that.
So that sounds really
interesting.
Yeah, so this is a surrealism novel, so it is one of those books where weird things happen.
I just have to accept it and don't try to make it make sense. I've done this before.
This one isn't quite as difficult as my Invisible Helicopter book, though. It does have a pretty linear plot, a linear story, and all of the characters
that
are really great. I really love Unwin as a character, because he is he's that trope of, I was just living my normal life as a secretary for a detective, and then all of a sudden he's thrown into this whole plot line of just craziness, like almost Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where he's like, I'm just a secretary. I don't know why I'm here.
I really love that kind of story, because there's a lot of things within Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that make no sense. And you just have to be like, oh, okay, this is why. Oh, I have to have a towel? Okay.
Yeah. And it's a really, even though it's about murder and it's about a detective agency, it's a really, really fun book to read. I really enjoy reading it. There isn't any sort of like, at least in my opinion, there isn't really like a deep undercurrent tone of like how to handle mental health or, you know, like that. Like, it's just kind of a fun book to read with these weird little tidbits. And It is not poetic like some of the other surrealism novels, or the only other surrealism novel that I recommended to you.
Yeah.
It's a really, it reads like, you know, like a storybook should, and, linear plot. And I really do think that you'll enjoy it. And it's a super fun book. So,
okay. That's what I need in my life. I need a fun book.
Yeah, with murder.
Ooh, fun book with murder. It's great. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm excited to give you your title. It's been a while since I've read it. I was just real quick reading through the blurb, and I might have fucked up. We'll see.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, so I will give you, you'll understand as soon as I read the blurb. There's an aspect to this that I didn't think about.
Okay.
All right, so the title of the book is Cinder.
Is it about Cinderella?
It is.
Aha! I got it! I did it!
But like, but Cinderella what?
Cinderella, if her story went bad.
So, funny story, Throne of Glass is a Cinderella fairy tale retelling of what if Cinderella went to the ball to kill the prince instead of to dance with him. So, I actually kind of gave you, you're getting two Cinderella retellings back to back. My bad.
Oh, okay.
I wanted this one because it's a completely different storyline, completely different plot. It's 1,000 times different. Also, you can listen to it for free on Hoopla. So I was specifically looking for books that I've read that are on Hoopla. So anyway, gotcha. It is a fairy tale retelling of Cinderella, but it's set in the future. It's sci-fi. It's Cinderella plus cyborgs and lunar people.
You know I love cyborgs. You know I love cyborgs.
Yeah, so I think that you will like it. But okay, let me read you the blurb and you'll see why I fucked up already.
Uh-oh, let's
completely,
hear it.
Like,
let's
I read this it. Book. I read this book like 6 or 7 years ago and I forgot. Uh-oh. Okay, so the number one times... best-selling series, a wicked mashup of fairy tale and Terminator set in a Star Wars kind of world, Marissa Meyer's Cinder is a fresh and fiercely ingenious futuristic retelling of Cinderella. Humans and androids crowd the raucous streets of New Beijing. A deadly plague ravages the population. I forgot about the plague.
Oh, no.
I forgot about the plague.
Oh my god, a plague.
I can't believe I forgot about that, because like I had this all, like, I don't have another book to give you. I'd already had this all queued up and everything, so I'm so sorry. But like, what am I supposed to do? Not read any book that has like diseases in it ever again?
I just, like, I feel like every single book that you have given me has had some sort of, like, reminder that we're in the middle of a pandemic.
I just read a lot of dystopian, so, okay. Anyway,
it was not a dystopian romance novel where they had the fucking constellation Corona.
That was 1,000% a coincidence. Okay, so anyway, a deadly plague ravages the population. From space, a ruthless lunar people watch, waiting to make their move. No one knows that Earth's fate hinges on one girl, Cinder. A gifted mechanic is a cyborg. She's a second-class citizen with a mysterious past, reviled by her stepmother and blamed for her stepsister's illness. But when her life becomes intertwined with the handsome Prince Kai's, she suddenly finds herself at the center of an intergalactic struggle and a forbidden attraction. Caught between duty and freedom, loyalty and betrayal, she must uncover secrets about her past in order to protect her world's future. I fucking love this book.
All right.
It's so good. It's funny. Like, there's a lot of really funny dialogue. Cinder's best friend is a robot. So enjoy that.
Hell yes. Like, listen, I have been joking with all of my friends that we should just become a transhuman society, aka we all just become cyborgs, and they think I'm joking, and I'm absolutely not.
Well, so in this book, when you are a cyborg, you're a second class citizen because you're not 100% human, and also in order to
that is offensive.
Like, in order to get cyborg parts, you kind of have to then. Like, you all, like, for society to save you, like, if you're about to die and they have to replace a body part, and then you become a cyborg, like, you have to either pay a crazy amount of money or then you become a slave to society. So, there's a lot of cyborg hatred and a lot of cyborg prejudice. And, yeah, so they're very much treated as second-class citizens. And that's why it's so, like, Cinder is not supposed to meet Prince Kai. And she, you know, they're not supposed to like each other because he's a prince and she's, you know, the lowest of low. She doesn't even know how much of her is actually human because she doesn't remember when she was made a cyborg.
Huh. I really like the cover. This is a badass cover.
I think that's the new cover. The cover used to be different. I love this new cover, though. She's a mechanic.
Yeah.
She's really fucking smart. So it's, yeah, there's just a lot of, she, like, mechanic like Kaylee and Firefly kind of a thing. Smart, funny girl, but also very sweet and, you know, wants to still be a girl. So.
Well, I am definitely intrigued. I definitely am feeling like this is, I feel like this is going to be an interesting read. And
yeah, hopefully a palate cleanser, despite the plague stuff. I think that it's, hopefully it's definitely a bit interesting. Of a palate cleanser. I can't believe I forgot that. Like, who the fuck does that? I can't believe.
Really, in today's day and age, like, really, there just are a lot of things in our world right now that we're like, this should be fiction, but it's not. It's actually happening.
I wish it was.
And so,
like, when do we get assigned our districts? Is that now or later?
Oh my gosh. We'd be the potato district and let me get out my potato cannon and I will get you. But yeah, it's really like, I'm not too bugged by that. I don't think, I mean, like I have heard from a lot of people and I am not actually the same way at this point in time. Like, but a lot of people are saying, I'm so sick and tired of hearing about the, you know what, and you know, people talking about it, but it's just, it's our reality right now, and if there's a book in it that has a plague, like, maybe it'll just be like, oh, man, wonder how long till we become this.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even remember what the symptoms of the plague are. It doesn't remind me. I don't think it's, like, corona-like or anything like that.
I mean, even if it isn't, a plague is a plague, so...
Yeah.
When I run for president, it will be under a transhumanism platform. So
just so
you all are aware.
Cyborgs for all.
Everybody gets cyborg arms. Oh, nothing can go wrong. So Allie and I have a little bit of an announcement to make. We kind of discussed this and we were discussing it when we were together and we discussed it just now. We are going to start releasing our podcast monthly. Mm-hmm. The main reason being for this is that our episodes have gotten really long. We do not want to have to try and cut down on the content, but it's really hard to edit longer episodes. And it's also hard to listen to longer episodes. And we, especially with, like, we didn't talk about this until this episode, but with how we're trying to read our own books as well, and we're trying to have reading not be a, like, oh my god, I have to finish this book in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We're trying
it's
to make
important
it the
to
leisure.
Us that it's important to us that the reading stays fun, because that's our self-care, and if it starts to become not fun, then I think that our content is going to suffer as well. And we don't want to, you know, have a bunch of delays in getting content out to you. And, like, unless we started only discussing one book per week, and then knowing Bronwyn and I, we'd probably still have that episode be an hour and a half long, even if we just talked about one book the whole yeah. time. And that's so, and I don't think that's something we want to do.
So what we are going to do is, if you are not a patron of Pants Pending, which you should be, because we were going to release Childhood Pictures if we got more patrons, and we did not hit that goal. So what
yeah,
the heck?
Yeah, so we still got those Childhood Pictures to release.
Yeah, so patreon.com/pantspending. That's patreon.com/pantspending. Every 2 weeks, we're going to be releasing, or not every 2 weeks, I'm sorry, in between our monthly episodes. So we'll be releasing something 2 weeks apart. It'll be an episode, and then we'll be releasing 2 weeks from then, we'll be releasing an episode just for the patrons, for the Pants Pending patrons, where we will discuss the other media, different things that are going on, possibly current events. We're going to try to keep it to media that we wouldn't yeah. necessarily
because
the, talk
there's
about
still
otherwise.
A lot of stuff that Bronwyn watches and consumes that I don't necessarily, you know, but we do a lot more than just read. And I think it would be fun for us to be able to have just like a 30 or 45 minute chat of some of the other media that we are consuming in between. And that would yeah. be just for patrons. It would not be as long of an episode. So you wouldn't have to feel like you got to buckle up for, you know, hour and a half into our episode.
Yeah.
Kind of in
between. Because we still want Trading Pages to be about us trading books and reading it back and forth. Mm-hmm. It just became really clear this last round. We push every time to finish yeah. and to get the episodes out. But it became really clear after this round that we were like, okay, for our mental health and for our sanity and yeah. for our quality, we just need to have a month in between.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. And it's
but
like, this
will
is
not,
yeah.
you will not lack content because when no. we do our sort of bantering episodes, we don't even really edit those.
You just get like you just mainline Allie and Bronwyn stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
It's insane.
We edit it a bit. We edit it like a touch, but that's more sound quality type things. And I don't know. Like we don't really super duper edit it, so it's just gonna be kind of stream of consciousness. We'll put it out into the world and it'll exist. So
yeah.
hopefully you will still get your Bron and Allie content that all of our 10 listeners crave oh so much. And
but I mean to get those episodes on our Patreon, it you can get just a single episode for $1, so it's a really good deal. It really helps keep the lights on, you know, with our overall network with Pants Pending. Also gives us a way to keep doing episodes every couple of weeks without feeling like we have to really smash these books, and sometimes, you know, that ends up being not fun.
Yeah, and it, oh, I totally just lost my train of thought. I had something in my brain and then it left. It just evacuated. What was the last thing you said?
It starts to become not fun.
I don't think it had anything to do with that. Well, I can't remember. Must have not been important enough. But, sorry, I was going to correct you, actually. So on Patreon, this is what it was. So it's actually you can choose to pay per podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And per mm-hmm. podcast episode, or you can just donate $1 per month, or I think it's maybe $5. We don't know anything about the Patreon.
Well, go check out our Patreon, or actually our network's Patreon, and, you know, check it out and see, you know, what works best for you.
It's a very, very small dollar amount, and you can get access to all of the Patreon episodes. So it's not just like you pay $1 to listen to a certain episode. You become a patron and you have access to Never-Ending Random Discussion, Bumbling Sanity, The Social Hour, all of that extra content. And you also have access to early releases to the podcast that have more foresight than we do and that can actually that don't record and release on the same day. So
hey, we are working with a time change. We both work full time. There are literally only 2 days a week that we can work on this. So I think we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, we are doing pretty good. Not to put ourselves down, but we are still a baby podcast. But we would really love if you would go become a patron so that you can listen to our in-between episodes and also support the network, because Andrew and Amanda are awesome. We got to visit them, and recorded an episode of Bumbling Sanity social distancing style. We
that
literally
made it
were
twice
out on the front
as
porch.
Long as it normally would be.
Yeah, because that's our MO. That's what we do. We met. If you guys have not listened to that episode of Bumbling Sanity yet, it was really fun.
Oh,
and it's
it was
a really
amazing.
Great episode.
Oh, it was so great.
And,
it was so great.
And if you're not listening to Nerd or Bumbling Sanity or any of Andrew and Amanda's podcasts, you absolutely should, because they are really funny and they're really great. So support the network by patreon.com/pantspending. Please just take a look, check it out. We'd really appreciate it. And you will get to listen to our bonus content. And
Yeah,
I think it's about time that I think that our outro has officially become longer than either of our segments.
I know, I was like, if we can keep this to 15 minutes, I think we'll be okay, and I think we failed. But that's all right, that's how it is with us.
We are physically incapable of doing any such
thing.
We're
really trying. Our executive functioning between the two of us is not super great. So anyway, thanks so much for listening. If you are enjoying this podcast, you can find it on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. This podcast is hosted by Anchor FM and is part of the Pants Pending Studios Entertainment Network. Make sure you click subscribe so you don't miss any of our new episodes, and leave us a voicemail on the Anchor app. You might even appear in one of our episodes. You can also become a supporter, which we really appreciate, because books ain't cheap. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Trading Pages Pod, and on Facebook at Trading Pages Podcast.
Want to ask us questions, recommend a book, want to talk to us about your recent frog experiences? Send us an email at tradingpagespodcast@gmail.com. Join us on our next episode, where we discuss Cinder by Marissa Meyer and The Manual of Detection by Jedediah Barry. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks so much. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Trading Pages is now part of the Pants Pending Studios Entertainment Network. To find out more about Pants Pending Studios and everything it has to offer, visit pantspending.com.
Exactly what's on the page, Allie, and nothing more, nothing less.
I read exactly what's on the teleprompter.